Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Pensacola, Florida, it's time for Pensacola Business Radio. Now, here are your Business Radio X hosts.
Good morning, everybody. Keith Everett here, broadcasting live from DeVille Square. And I have surrounding me right now women in leadership. And I have to tell you, I am not intimidated, although Colleen suggested that I might be. But
I think he is.
Okay, maybe I am, just a little bit. So today is episode one of Women in Leadership. And what we're wanting to do here with Pensacola Business Radio is really share some of the experiences and the uncommon commons that are with women in leadership here in our community and globally as well, because I know a lot of you do business outside of this community here in Pensacola. But instead of me introducing everybody on my own, I'm just really going to pass the mic around. So, Amy, please jump right in.
Hey, good morning. Thank you.
You're welcome.
My name is Amy Remington. I'm general counsel for the Landrum Human Resource Companies here in Pensacola. We have Landrum Professional, which is a professional employer organization, and Landrum Staffing, which does temporary placement for local companies. So in addition to that, I'm also chairing with my husband this year the Autism Pensacola Banquet. So we're very involved in the community, and Landrum is a big supporter of all types of community activities.
Yeah. Well, thank you for being here this morning.
Thank you.
Okay, so next.
Hi. Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm Kim Hannon, and I'm both a visual artist and a business and personnel staffing strategy consultant.
Yeah.
And I'm currently working directly with Chick-fil-A 9 Mile Road, where they're doing things. Chick-fil-A has a reputation of doing fast food differently than anybody
sure,
else.
They're absolutely. Kind of my kids elite. Love it.
So do my grandchildren.
Yeah.
My kids did, and now my grandchildren. But the Chick-fil-A at 9 Mile Road has really developed a reputation among Chick-fil-A itself as doing staffing strategy differently. They've developed a very strong leadership development program. When we interview people to bring them in, they go through a 5 interview process just to make chicken.
Yeah.
And they have to do research ahead of time. They have to read a book. They have to listen to some videos and audios.
Yep.
And then once they're in with us, they have to go through a 6-month off the clock, but bonus paid, leadership and personal growth process.
Well, you have to be motivated, don't you?
You do. And it's funny, a lot of people, Robert Barnes owns our particular affiliate, our operation there. And when he recruited me a while ago to come in, he says, Kim, people don't drive down 9 Mile Road and say, oh, I want to make chicken for a living. That's just, he says, but I need you to, I need you to sell that for me. And so we kind of put the shoulder to it, and over the last year and a half, redefined all of the elements that he had spent several years putting together and built a cohesive recruiting program, and it's paying off. It's amazing.
Well, and I noticed the talent, the job description was talent acquisition, which I thought was great, because it's not recruiter. It's not, I'm going to find the person to work. It's not HR. It was, you were actually acquiring some talent.
We are, and then we develop it.
Yeah.
And like I say, they're paid bonuses for achieving it, and they're given pay increases incrementally, and they know it going in.
Yeah.
It's a big part of what makes his company a little bit different than anybody else's.
Well, neat. Well, thank you for being here.
Thank you.
All right. So, Barbara, take it away.
Hey, good morning, Keith. Thank you for having me. My name is Barbara Barber. I'm the founder and director of East Hill Academy here in Pensacola, Florida. We've been here since 2002. East Hill Academy is a private nonprofit organization, and we specialize in educating children with autism and other related learning disorders. We have children from K through 12th grade. We also have a satellite school in Milton, and we're in the process of opening our third location in Century, Florida.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about this for a second, too, because you were the impact receiver,
yes.
correct?
Yes, yeah. we were, absolutely.
Which is what's that helping getting your campuses expanded.
Yes.
That's awesome.
That is correct.
Very
we won
cool.
last year, and what we did is we had 2 new classrooms we needed for our non-conversational students. Non-conversational means these children actually have speech, but they kind of live in their own head. So you have to teach them to use their words, and that's the name of a program that we developed about 7 years ago.
Yeah.
We were able to match those funds, and we built 4 new classrooms, and they are full. We have 32 new students.
Yeah.
filling those classrooms this year. It's awesome.
Progress is good, huh?
It's excellent.
Very cool. Well, thank you for being here with us this morning.
Thank you.
Okay, Miss Colleen, how are you?
Good morning.
Welcome back.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Now, my name is Colleen Edwards Chesley, and as I mentioned, I'm the founding director of Powerful Women of the Gulf Coast. And this is exciting for me because back in October, I left a financial career that I had done for 25 years. And that was a big step, obviously a big change in my world, but it was to really do something that I have an equal passion for and something that I see a lot of opportunity for. And that's the not-for-profit Powerful Women of the Gulf Coast. And with that organization, our goal is to promote, advance, and improve women in business. So exactly what you're doing today, I'm so appreciative that we're coming together to have this conversation because I think there's a lot of benefit that women can receive from this type of discussion, but also men out there. And the more successfully we can each be, the more successfully our communities and our whole world can be as well.
Yeah. And I think you just opened the door for maybe a platform for some things that maybe people are uncomfortable to discuss in the workforce or don't know to discuss, but really just educating some people on what it means to be a woman in leadership and or what it just means to be a leader, period. Mm-hmm. You know, so
I think you're right.
So, okay. So let's just kick that one off then. So, Amy, what is your definition of a leader?
Oh, gosh, that's a tough one. Well, I would have to, of course, refer everybody to the great Quint Studer, who has defined leadership in just management book after management book.
Yeah.
So beautifully. He can articulate it better than anybody. And more than that, he actually lives it. He and his wife, Rishi, live the definition. But I think it is stepping up to do what you're passionate about and doing it as well as you possibly can, regardless of what that thing is. If you... you know, I'm a lawyer and I want to be the very best lawyer that I can be. But if your passion is something entirely different, then as long as you are being the best at that job that you can be, then you're being a great leader and a great role model and a great example.
Yeah. Very neat. All right, Barbara, what do you think?
I agree with that completely. As far as the passion goes, there's very few of us I have found, in my lifetime that actually know what their passion is and go for it as far as being able to put it into their business, their work world, what you do every single day.
Yeah.
I tell my folks that my employees and parents, I'm the only person I know that will get up at 4:30 in the morning and go to work every single day. I mean, who else does that sometimes?
Right.
That's when you're really passionate about what you do. So I agree with that. I think that if you can follow your passion, if you know what it is, then you really need to stretch forward and move in that direction.
Yeah. What if your passion changes? That's okay too?
I guess that's okay too. Mine's definitely on the road.
Because I know some of that's what is what's happened in my transition. You know, your passion mm-hmm. changes. So mm-hmm. maybe it's just applying that same amount of energy.
Just follow it.
Don't call me at 4:30 in the morning though. 5:15 maybe, but 4:30 is way off limits.
Okay.
So.
Well, and I have a similar yeah. path with that too, leaving the financial career. And some people have said, don't you, you know, it was so stressful and that's a lot of responsibility to manage somebody's finances, especially in, you know, weeks and months like we've had recently. But quite honestly, it was a huge passion for me.
Yeah.
Huge passion for me. And I think a lot of times people do struggle with that. Finding their passion is definitely important, but I think a lot of people have multiple passions. And for me, it was something that was real passionate for 25 years. Is still passionate, but then there's something else that's pulling a little bit harder at my heartstrings.
Yeah.
And that becomes an even stronger passion. And also for me, it was more about realizing that I can't be Superwoman. And even though multitasking was something that I've always admired in myself, I've become to realize that that's not necessarily a skill that I want to put on a resume.
Yeah.
You know, that doesn't
Which
mean.
Is funny because 5 years ago it was.
It used yeah, it to was. Be.
You know?
It used to be.
And now it's no, you should do one at a time.
Exactly.
And be good at it.
Exactly. And I think a lot of times women do struggle with making those tough decisions. I mean, those are hard to say, let go of this one career and put everything into this other one that's, you know, some people would say, well, that's not really even a career. You're not getting paid to do that. But it's definitely something that can build into a career
yeah.
and is, you know, a huge passion.
It's a leap of faith, huh?
Absolutely. Definitely
well,
a leap of faith.
And changing, a passion changing shouldn't necessarily, no, it's not that it always is a good thing, but it shouldn't necessarily be viewed as a bad thing. Because that is not recognizing the nature of a human being, which is to grow. If we don't grow, we are not adding value to ourselves or anybody around us. And of course, if you're wanting to truly be a leader, number one, you have to be able to craft a vision that you're passionate about and then translate that capably to somebody else or ideally somebody's else. And then they follow you and then you're facilitating that accomplishment and in developing that. And it often opens up doors to new opportunities.
Yeah.
30 years ago, I would have never put myself at this table. Getting out of high or college, marrying a Navy guy and chasing him around the United States for 26 years, you know, in the military situation, you, one party definitely ends up being the primary breadwinner. It just, it's the nature of things. And it is,
sure.
It is generally the military person, that's the partner, the military partner in it all.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody, if you choose to have children, has to make sure that life's kind of circulating in some kind of a sensical manner.
Yeah, flow.
Instead of,
yeah.
And so my career changed over and over again. Over time, I learned to embrace the change because every time we moved to a different time zone, different city, I got stuck doing a new job. I started out an artist and then was forced. You can't earn money doing art changing every 2 years. You got to develop a following, especially pre-internet days.
Yeah.
And, so I was forced into the business world if I wanted to do anything that added money to the family coffers.
Sure.
And so every time I moved, I found somebody new to mentor me and learn something to do, not to do, other things to do well, new opportunities for education. And so change is not bad. It's just opening up the door for growth and then translating that. And,
yeah.
and it works. It translates well into your business. Today I'm a business person of this many people, but tomorrow I want it to be that many people. And the next day, you know, in the next year,
sure.
It's growing it and expanding my reach, and building that, building depth into whatever it is that you're doing.
So, and you wear a lot of hats, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. And part of that is obviously what you just explained is, and you found passion in many things. How do you decide who gets what day?
Ooh, Kim or women?
Well,
I do it poorly some days.
You know, Colleen makes the comment about multitasking, but yet, and I'm the same way because there's five or six things that actually there's more than that, but some of them I've decided are not necessarily passions, but they're just fun to do.
Right.
But there's the five or six things that really, really want my time.
You have to learn to be honest with yourself. It was funny. I was talking to a young adult the other day and she was telling me, oh, I did this with my money and I made this choice. And I know good and well that's not factual. And I wanted to laugh at her, but she was not in a receiving mode. So
sure.
Power of communication is understanding whether somebody's even going to hear you, so waste your breath or not. But I thought, are you lying to yourself or are you just trying to fool me?
Yeah.
And I think in the moment, she really believed what she was trying to sell me. So it's learning to be honest with yourself. You got to keep it real. And then you have to turn around and make realistic priorities. And a lot of people are writing, the phrase escapes me, some kind of a mission statement for their life.
Mm-hmm.
And so prioritize, honestly, take the time to put it on paper. It's the only time that you'll slow down is if you have to write it down.
Yeah.
And what's most important to you? And so 30 years ago, it was building that relationship with my husband. And then we were gifted with children. And so I had to prioritize that. But it wasn't to the point of dismissing myself.
Sure.
I still was able to grasp opportunities. And in those conversations with my husband, he would say, hey, I'm home. Go do something you want to do.
Yeah.
Grow in a way. And so, and then I chose to limit myself to working when the kids were in school, you know, between 9 and 3. And so,
yeah.
You know, I wasn't out building a career, I thought, but I was building a career for today.
Sure.
And so it's prioritizing and then staying true to those priorities and don't just try to wing it. You can't fly by the seat of your pants when it comes to making career and life decisions.
Yeah. So how different is working to build a career today, capability of being from 9 to 3 as it was 5, 10, 15 years ago?
Well, I can answer that question because that's exactly what I do. I was very, very blessed to be hired by a great law firm and I went to them and I said, here's what I bring to the table. I have skills. I have clients. I have no desire to steal your clients. I have no desire to open my own law firm. I want to work part-time because I want to have children and I want to be there for them in the afternoon. And they said, sure, no problem. And so I had that opportunity with a firm called Bates & Rogers, and it was Philip Bates and Casey Rogers who gave me that flexibility. And I learned so much from them. And then I went to a different firm, Bozeman, Jenkins, and Matthews, who allowed the same thing.
Yeah.
And then when I went to work for Landrum 10 years ago, more than 10 years ago now, they offered the same thing. And so I think that the track record has shown that women can absolutely have a part-time career, which I have, right. I work 30 hours a week, and still be highly successful if companies are flexible. And today, the flexibility comes easy because I carry a cell phone, I have my email, I have
the dreaded laptop,
I have the iPad,
the tablet.
but they're great. If they need me, they call me. If they don't, then they don't on the time that I'm not working. But I'm very flexible with them as well. If they need me at 10 o'clock, I answer the phone.
Yeah.
And I think I hear a lot of women who say, I'm highly skilled in this area, whether it's banking and finance or sales or whatever, but they want to be home with their children in the afternoon. And so what women can bring to the table is really strong leadership and strong skills. And, but they don't have to do it in 40 or 50 or 60 traditional hours. They can do it in 30 hours. And what I have seen from the women who have taken this career path as I have is that they could really get 40 hours worth of work done in a condensed period.
Sure.
Because they come to the office, they shut their door, they get their work done, and then they move on, rather than having a lot of chitter chatter and an hour and a half lunches like some other people may have if they are willing to work 50 or 60 hours a week. So I think women can absolutely do that. But I think Colleen hit on a really important point, and that's, you know, to be honest with yourself, you can't have it all. You can't have, or I have not. I mean, I'll just speak for myself. I cannot work 30 hours a week and be expected to have the executive benefits of somebody who works 40 or 50 or 60 hours a week.
Right.
We just have to be honest about that. And that's where the choices come in. And the choice I've made is I love my job and I love the time period in which I get to do it. And I'm lucky to be with a company who sees the benefit of that.
Yeah.
And I think more companies should explore that.
Well, and how much of that in your experience do you see hopefully shaping the new workforce that's coming into play here, whether it be man or woman, you know, is that, do you find companies really adapting to this strategy?
I think just look at Facebook. The CEO and owner of Facebook just took 2 months off for paternity leave.
Yeah, but he's worth $1 billion. Right. He can take a couple months off.
Right, but that would have been unheard of 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Whether you're the CEO of General Motors or the CEO of a small company, that paternity leave would have been frowned upon. So I think that's leading the way, and I think that's a great path to be on if you're willing to make the sacrifices.
Right. Or just decide that what makes you happy may not necessarily have to be 60 to 70 hours a week working.
And what fulfills you is not necessarily the largest paycheck in the world.
Exactly. Yeah.
Learning to settle and not have to have it all.
Yeah.
But have the things that enrich your life. Can you pay the bills, and do I have surrounding me what enriches me and grows me and blesses me?
And I think also career choice has a lot to do with it. I mean, being in a field like an attorney that can have part-time hours is something that particular industry can accommodate. I interviewed, in just a little shameless plug, Powerful Women of the Gulf Coast magazine, we interviewed Katie Higgins on Friday, the first female Blue Angel pilot. And she really, her biggest concern and biggest fear in business is putting off having a family.
Yeah.
And that's a real risk for her. In the military, you couldn't do a 9-to-3 opportunity. I mean, she's full time with them. There's no flex time with the military. So that's a real concern that she's got to deal with. That
she's probably got a pretty tight practice schedule too.
she has worked pretty difficult. Yes. Yeah. Difficult hours. Yeah. So there's not, it's either family or postponed family. I mean, there's no in between for somebody like her in that position, but that's a particular, you know, industry. Yeah. There's a lot of industries that I think have become a lot more flexible in accommodating those types of flex hours. And even Kim, you're technically might be part-time in everything that you do, but combined, it's more than full-time.
Oh, yeah. I put in a 50 or 60 hour week, but it is broken up between my PWGC work, my advisement work and consulting work, and then my artwork. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I do that. But then again, I have graduated all my children into adulthood.
She has succeeded.
My husband is self-sustaining and he doesn't mind hot dogs. Yeah. In fact, actually, he's a overgrown bachelor when it comes to that. He loves having cereal and hot dogs for dinner all in the same night. I'm not talking in two different evenings. And so, you know, but
mental picture, I did not need.
Yeah, right.
And so, but again, that is a result of 30 years, because 30 years ago, he was not that forward thinking,
yeah.
And 30 years ago, we weren't there. very, very traditional. And so, you know, if I was the stay-at-home person, I should have dinner prepared and it should have at least three courses. And then all of a sudden you get to go on, is the value in the three courses or who prepared it? Or is the value in us investing in one another and growing with one another? And that's, you know, but that again took 30 years to develop for us. And you don't have that day one.
Well, and I think you bring a very good point is the support system. And I'm lucky to have that same support system too, where my husband 100% supports the work that I do for Landrum. He supports the nonprofit work that we do outside of our home with our church and such, because there's only 24 hours in a day and we both have those 24 hours. And how you allocate it's really important. And that's where the priorities come into play. And that support is critical. And the time in your life is interesting too, because like you said, you have more free hours than somebody who has small children at home.
Oh, sure.
And those hours can be allocated differently.
Oh, I vividly remember, of course, now I recognize that it was postpartum, but after the birth of my first child.
Hindsight's always 20/20, isn't it?
Oh boy, oh boy. Life teaches you some hard lessons.
Right.
But, after the birth of my first child, I was in a postpartum slump of some sort. It wasn't severe or anything, but still having those post-baby delivery blues. Mm-hmm. And somebody recruited me to sell I don't know, do we plug a company here?
Sure.
I've sold Mary Kay, a high reputation employer of women and now men, surprisingly enough. But
wait, seriously?
Oh, yeah.
Wow. I had no idea.
I did a double take the first time I saw one, too. But anyhow, and I'm seeing all these women, you know, going to Dallas and getting these cars and furs and trips to Jamaica.
Uh-huh.
And I'm crying because, you know, I'm selling $45 of makeup a week, you know, and that was my get out of the house opportunity. And my husband looked at me. He says, honey, look at those women. They're all 45, 50, 60 years old. So don't expect to have what they have today. And it's stages of life, being honest, setting your priorities and allowing your priorities to flex.
That's great advice.
So, okay. So speaking of advice for those of us, and I'm raising my hands for those that can't see it, that have young daughters in middle school and in high school and about to graduate into this workforce that has drastically changed just from 3 years ago to now, and will probably change even faster in the next 6 months to a year. But what advice would you give them?
Well, I have one of those. She's 16. She just turned 16 about a week ago.
Okay. So let me rephrase. What advice would you give someone that's going to listen? Because we all know me giving the advice to my daughters is not going to be the same as Amy giving the advice to my daughters.
That's probably true. So what would I tell your daughters?
Yeah, exactly.
I think find what you are good at and be honest about it. I think a lot of times, I know personally, I've had to tell people when they ask me to do something, I'm like, I'm not particularly good at that. So I am good at this, but I'm not good at that. So I find what you are good at and stick with that and make it something you enjoy, because if you have to do a job for 20 or 30 or 40 or 50 hours a week, you better like it.
Yeah.
You better love it. You better love the people you're with. You better love what you do on a day-to-day basis, the technical part of it. You know, for my daughter, for example, she's looking at sports medicine because she actually went through physical therapy and she thought it was great. And she enjoys the athletic part of it and she enjoys the science behind it. So I think just the key is find what you are good at and make good grades, and then the workforce will follow you.
Yeah. All right. Well, and you said something too that I think is one of my qualities of leadership, and that's know when to say, I don't know. You know what I mean? Know because growing up and being the kid, you always had I'm going to take over the world and dominate and everything. And then finally, when you wise up and realize that part of being a good supporter or leader is saying, I don't know, and you find the right person to do that.
Oh, what
huge.
Better way to forge a partnership as you go into those, you know, there are multiple stages of growth. And so there's the hands-on and the directing and then the coaching, and then you're starting to delegate and take your hands back off the situational leadership model. What better way as you're going into those, their brain is starting to seriously activate at this age.
Yeah.
And to build that trust and partnership, if you say, I don't know, let's go find the answer together.
Let's Google it.
let's Google it.
Which was not an option in my day.
No, it wasn't. Yeah. Who had the most recent edition of Encyclopedia Britannica,
exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
So you go to that neighbor's house. Who was the sucker that bought that edition this year?
Yeah.
But finding that and finding that and then walking through it together. My husband, we only have one daughter that is not 100% into her career yet, but she's a young adult and she found her passion in the food industry. And so, you know, he took her on a date to Global Grill. Great place to go.
Sure.
And then went over to PSC and got a behind the scenes tour of their culinary arts program.
Yep.
And he said, let's find some answers together. How can you take this from where you are today to making it a long-term career? Because you can only make, you know, you can only do so much on an $8 to $10 an hour
sure.
job. And so time's going to come where she's going to want a $15, $20, $25 an hour job
yep.
and be a leader because she's naturally born a leader. And then recognizing the unique differences in your children because, you know, with our girls, all we ended up all girls too. My husband said God has a great sense of humor.
Yes. And a place for you.
but he would have probably been a horrible dad to boys. But all three of them had different gifts.
Yeah.
But we all three challenged them, even though that they would loved the idea of homemaking.
Yeah.
Still go get a career because you never know when you're going to have to pick up the reins and be the primary breadwinner. Who's to assume that, you know, today or 5 or 10 years from now, you don't have to be able to pay all the bills yourself.
Right.
You may not get a life partner that can do that for you. And so they've all three gotten a degree of some sort and have career capacity.
Yeah.
And they're each living it out in totally three different ways.
Oh,
so,
I bet.
And it's all totally unique. And I've got a brunette, a redhead, and a blonde, and they're that different in their choice, life choices too.
And that makes total sense, yeah. you know. So, Barbara, yeah. Every parent I imagine that you deal with in some way, shape, or form is a leader in because
yes.
of the struggles that they're dealing with. What's the advice that you give to some of them?
I think that the most important for me is obviously the education. And for the parents, they're trying to figure out, how do I educate this child
yeah.
who processes information differently? I think you have to look at the whole child and, you know, not necessarily just the educational system that's in front of it. And,
sure.
and that's kind of what we started out doing years ago. I brought some personal, you know, experiences to the table because I have one daughter. I'm a grandmother, by the way. I have three beautiful grandchildren. And my daughter had a processing disorder back in the day, if you will. And we didn't know what that was. There was no information regarding it. And there was obviously no help or knowledge in the school system. And she was not thriving. She was miserable. She was failing the first grade twice. I mean, it was just a sad situation. What I took away from it, understanding that my daughter was very bright. She was a different duck, but she was very bright. This
yeah.
was my child, and I understood that she knew how to do things, and she could comprehend, and she could learn, but she learned different information processed differently with
sure.
her. It was, long story short, you know, my goals in the early years were that she just make it through the 12th grade. It's all about the education. My father was a teacher, so I grew up in that, you know, that
yeah.
kind of a household. What ended up happening is, with my psychology background, I did a lot of research to try to figure out, how does she take in information in her environment?
Yeah.
And then how does she turn it around so she understands it? And that truly is the key for our children who have processing disorders. And the numbers are growing and growing and growing.
You know, that's a good key for any parent to ask their
it
child.
It is. It is.
It really is.
Absolutely. I looked at her differently and I said, she can. When the school system told me she couldn't and probably wouldn't,
yeah.
I did not accept it. So that's the advice I give to my parents. Do not accept that. You know your child. If you honestly follow your heart will tell you that your child capabilities are either
yeah.
this or this. My daughter has a doctorate degree and she has a fabulous job and is happily married and three beautiful children. It was not easy. It wasn't easy
sure.
even in college for her. But did she do it? Absolutely. Can children do it? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Are you going to go down a different path? You better believe it. Going
Barbara,
down a different road.
It sounds like you were the best advocate for your child that you could have been.
I was.
And I think that's a huge key. When you're advocating for your children, you have to be all in.
You have to be all in. And that's the one thing I tell my families. You have to be the advocate for your child. You cannot take no for an answer. If you're asking for help, for services for your child, and you know that's what they need, and the system somehow says, no, we can't do that for you, do not accept that. You know, find people who have found those services before. Ask around. It's amazing. There's a lot out there. that our families don't know about. Sometimes you have to kind of go through a weird path to get there. And that doesn't make sense. I'm thinking, you know, everybody needs to know about these things. So that's really what we try to do. I think that education is the big key. We have so many bright, bright, brilliant students at East Hill Academy. We do. It's amazing. Yeah. I've got children's IQs you would not believe. They're smarter than all of us combined. But they are so different and they process information so differently. How is it that we're supposed to educate these children so we can get them in the mainstream?
Yeah.
And they will find a cure for cancer or whatever it is that they're destined to do. But if we stop that destiny right now, then we've just lost another mind. And that's definitely not a good thing to
do. Well, and I think you just really underlined it. One of the best traits, I think, of being a leader, and that's if you don't like it, change it.
Change it.
And ask the right questions.
And that's really what I feel like we're doing. We're just over in our little corner, you know, we bring the kids in. This is what I want to do.
That's okay. Everybody started in a little corner.
Absolutely.
I promise. We all started in a little corner.
We're just doing our thing and very happy to do that.
Yeah.
But I think some of the points that you bring up, Barbara, are actually representative of most of us that don't have any type of learning disorders or any type of processing disorders at all. I mean, some of us, we talked earlier about passion and what if your passion changes? Well, it's the same thing in life. And so much of life can be overcome by it being more and more educated. I mean, I heard I'm a podcast addict, I'll admit it. But I heard a podcast yesterday that talked about that no matter what situation you go through, even though when you go through it, you think it's personal and it's only your situation, somebody else in this world has gone through that exact same situation and somebody's probably actually written a book about it. So, you know, that kind of blew me away that there's really nothing that we can experience in growing up in the business world, in life, and personal worlds that's not already been done before. It's just a matter of how do you take that situation and move forward from it? How do you learn and grow and become better?
Absolutely. I was not the only mother that had this experience.
Oh,
but
I'm sure.
I knew because I came through it on maybe the more positive end. I needed to be able to help other mothers with children that were very much like mine or more so to understand these are the nuances you're going to experience getting your child educated.
Yeah. I can only imagine how many people are like, oh, thank God somebody else is going through this with me kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes I think it's more of a calling. It is a passion, but it's definitely a calling.
Sure. Yeah. And it resonates with you and you go with it. I mean, you're up at 4:30 in the morning.
I am.
I'd say that's pretty well resonated.
Yeah.
So,
and I think Colleen brings up a great mark of a good leader as somebody who's willing to continue to learn.
You can never stop.
I don't do podcasts, but I'm always reading something. Mm-hmm. I love to learn. And I think I got that trait from my grandfather. After my grandmother died, after 50 years of marriage, he had to learn to cook.
Yeah.
And so he bought a Joy of Cooking cookbook. And he learned to cook. And it was kind of amazing to see that he wanted to learn this new thing. And I see that for so many really bright people, that this desire to continue to learn, whether it's from other people or from books or whatever it is, whether it's taking classes, whatever it is, but continuing to learn something new is really important.
You said your grandfather, and my grandfather was the same way. So he was the guy that just took stuff apart because he wanted to know how it worked.
Right.
So the downstairs basement had just stuff everywhere. I mean, it was the tinker kind of gene, I guess that is what it is. And so, you know, stuff, but everything he'd take apart, I'd say probably 99% ended up back together and working.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But it was that continuous, oh, well, let's see what the insides of it look like, you know? And I think that stuck with me too.
The word leader is not a stagnant word. It indicates forward movement. And so if you think about if you're wanting to be a leader and you want to get to a certain area and just stop and then just people, support you in what you do, that's not leadership.
Yeah.
Because you're not moving. And so in and of ourselves, we're not naturally going to just get smarter and learn new traits by just existing. And so you had, you know, Mark Miller wrote a book. Great.
Osmosis does not work like you think it does.
No, it doesn't.
It wasn't that easy.
Yeah.
Leadership in and of itself indicates that you have to self grow and you have to pursue that. It's not going to come to you. People don't just hand you things and say, here, automatically you're smarter.
Yeah.
Mark Miller writes the book, Great Leaders Grow. It's a very simple little analogy written in, I don't know, almost an Aesop's Fables kind of a format. And it talks about a young man. It's a part of a four series of leadership books, a series of four leadership books, following the growth of a young man from college to finally achieving a CEO position. And it didn't happen overnight. He just, you know, he thought he was going to graduate with his master's degree and lead a company.
That's what I thought too. I think we all did.
We all did, but it takes time, and it takes time to build the muscle at each stage and get good and not just absorb information and ta-da, zing, I'm there. You have to grow and you have to add to your repertoire, exactly. So leadership has to grow. It has to, or else you're not going to lead. People will pass you because they're leaders in the making, and they're going to walk right past you if you sit there and just be.
I think at the same time, you have to understand opportunities that are being presented consistently in front of you. And for me, that's what it was. You know, I didn't start this business until my daughter was out of college and I was in my middle 40s. So I had all of the family, most of that, even though I had that experience with her educating her. The opportunities continued to put themselves in front of me. The door, somebody was knocking on the door constantly. And I was going, what is this? What am I supposed to do? And I mean, I have the passion for it. I knew that. Mm-hmm. But when you've got to be able to recognize the opportunity and walk through that door when it's presented to you, and the rest falls into place, literally.
Yeah.
You get it. And maybe that's luck. I don't know.
Well, but you were already seeking. You were already in motion. You weren't just sitting there waiting for something to come to you. Opportunity presents itself to people that are looking for it and are trying to grow themselves. Yeah. If it doesn't happen. If you sit there, then you're going to gather dust.
Yeah.
But you were seeking opportunity and it came to you.
And you saw the light on your path. It may have taken a couple years of lighting your path, but if I can think about most of my great moments of success or achievement or just clarity, it was one of those things where it's like, oh, duh, that was kind of there the whole time. Yeah. But you really either slowed down for a minute and removed some of the real estate in this brain and made room for it, or it was literally such a slap in your face that you just couldn't deny it anymore.
I agree. To me, it's the opportunity. And I try to tell, anyone that's the young folks, particularly, go for it. I think Colleen's found an opportunity in this new adventure that she's undertaking. And that is strictly an opportunity. You know, go for it. Don't be afraid to walk through the door just because, it's not something that you've done before. Know that you're capable of doing it. You've got your passion behind you and you've got your experience. Mm-hmm.
So Colleen does my favorite trait of a leader. My absolute favorite trait of a leader. If you look around the room and you're the smartest person, you're in the wrong room, right? So Colleen consistently surrounds herself. Don't take this the wrong way.
No, it's true.
With people that are smarter.
Did you just say I was the dumbest person in their room? Is that literally what you just said?
No. With people that are smarter and that and you share the experiences, and that's absolutely. That's really what it is. Yeah, so, yeah. And I know you know how I meant that. So,
I know.
To me, and this was a trait I probably didn't learn until I was 25 or 26. When you're really kind of looking around and wondering why the team's not working, and you're just like, well, I just need somebody smarter than me, you know?
Absolutely.
Well, and I think it's okay to be able to say, again, like I said earlier, I'm not good at this, but I am good at that.
Yeah.
So I'm going to delegate this out to somebody who is good at this, because there are many things that I'm not very good at, but I can find somebody who can do that thing really, really well. Mm-hmm. And a rising tide floats all boats. And so if you can get the right team together and support each other, then that's a key to success.
Yeah. You built a whole group on it, so I'm not rude for saying it.
No, you're absolutely right. And consciously, I don't do that, but you're right.
Right.
Well, sometimes I do consciously. I mean, this group here today is evidence of it. But I think that sometimes that's difficult for people to do, is to want to surround themselves with people that are smarter than them.
Yeah.
you know, but it's absolutely something that I think has a tremendous amount of value. Yeah. And especially listening to the podcast and reading books and doing anything that's different, I try to look for opportunities. And Barbara, you mentioned education. That's exactly what it boils down to for me is educating myself, because I want to be available to whatever, when that next opportunity comes, I want to be there and recognize it, and also have the skills already built up to be able to handle it.
And you can do that. Education is changing in society, in the world globally. It is all about the internet.
Yeah.
Every single one of my kids has their own laptop computer at every one of our schools.
Yeah.
To be able to learn on, and this is the way of the future, you know, and like you said, I don't know how to do that necessarily, but I got great people that do for me.
I told you, I know a guy.
Or a gal.
Yeah. I know a couple of gals that could show this guy a whole new world when it comes to this technology stuff. Yeah. So
you can find the information these days to educate yourself about it.
Collaboration and teamwork. You look at a rugby team or a football team or a baseball team. We've got Super Bowl coming up in a week and a half. You're not going to send Peyton Manning out in the field and expect him to win by himself.
Right.
It's not going to happen. Or Cam. Depends. That's right. And it takes a whole team. And it takes a whole team of specialists that have been enabled and shared a vision and worked together. And there's trust and such built. Collaboration. We've got a society of people, everybody wants to be a sole proprietor. I want to be my own superstar.
Yeah. No.
But if you will align yourself and take the time to build a trust environment where that person's no longer a competitor, they're another specialist. I had a great lunch with somebody yesterday. And in the art world, everybody thinks that somebody else is trying to take their customer because there's only so many art dollars out there. And before the evening or before the lunch is done, we're talking about how can we collaborate? Because our clients might be the same, but the products are different.
Right.
And so building that trust relationship and then growing, Apple would have never gotten where it was if Gates had sat by himself.
Sure.
And you got to build trust. You got to get grammar.
You got to have a team.
And you have to have a team and then portray that vision and grow with it together.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think, if you don't realize that you are a co-creator at bottom line nature of human spirit, you are seriously on the wrong planet because from the second you're born, there are others that are contributing to your life and helping you create whatever. And the sooner you wrap your head around that business, friendship, family, otherwise.
Well, we look out and we see, any superstar Hollywood person out there, and they are the face you see. But if you go visit Hollywood,
7,000 behind them.
Exactly. They don't have that face, that body, that capacity to speak well.
Yeah.
A lot of actors and actresses cannot act on their own. They require somebody to direct them, to give them, to teach them vocal inflections.
Sure.
They're naturally gifted, but the gift is still raw. And so it takes a team to make them be the one face that you see out on the floor, you know, or in the middle of a stage.
Yeah. Okay, so I have to ask a question. Raising two daughters, and I'm realized that I'm surrounded by people smarter than me right now. So raising two daughters who soon will be into the workforce, talk to me about some of the barriers that you have all at some point faced and what I can prepare my, because I'm going to be like, yo, kid, I don't know. Go ask mom. You know what I mean? But I don't want to. I want to feel like that I've got some form of leg up to give my two daughters, you know, the advantage. So well, lay it on me.
You're sitting here watching I'm itching and wiggling because, I've experienced this personally.
Yeah.
I think the best thing that you can do is be the role model for them. And by that, I mean, if you are hiring somebody for a job, don't have a preconceived notion that a male or a female will do this job better.
Right.
Don't assume that workers' compensation is workmen's compensation.
Right.
Don't assume you're going to hire that IT guy, because we all say IT guy, it may be an IT gal.
Yeah.
I still see so much of that in the workplace, and I could give you many examples of when I've called to talk to another lawyer and they'll say, who are you calling on behalf of? Because they assume that I'm a staff person and not actually a lawyer. I've not been able to check out files at the courthouse in years past because they assume that I was a staff person and not a lawyer. I walked into a court reporter's office. They assumed I was a court reporter, not the lawyer.
And so,
do you have like a lawyer badge?
No,
how do you
I
do
don't.
That?
I really should have a lawyer badge.
I mean, honestly, how do you do that? Because does your business card work?
It does, yes, but I shouldn't have to present it. Nobody would ask my husband for his.
You don't
certainly.
Wear the suits that other attorneys right. that you can recognize from the all the way on the other side of the street wear.
The tie.
Exactly.
Male tie. Yeah.
Exactly.
So I do think the best thing that you could do for your daughters is to absolutely walk the walk and live the example and to assume that when you're hiring somebody that gender is irrelevant.
Yeah.
Because it is. It is completely irrelevant to a job skill.
Yeah.
I just think gender just does
Amy's
not
Amy's ready
matter.
To explode.
Oh,
she's like, I can write a whole book.
Well, I could. And here's the thing. You know, Title VII is something I'm absolutely passionate about. I love to talk about it. I love to teach it. I love to do presentations on it. And there are just so many examples in history. And it's the law, by the way. Let's not forget that it's a state and federal law that you can't discriminate or make employment decisions based on gender. But sometimes we still get those preconceived notions that I want to hire a, you know, youth director for my church and therefore it should be a female.
Right.
Well, no, that's not correct. Or I want to hire an IT guy. Well, no, maybe an IT gal. Mm-hmm. You just have to kind of twist your way of thinking so that you stop thinking about gender as being a job specific thing.
Amy, can you tell the story of the title of that law?
Say that again?
The filing of that law. Isn't that
it's Title VII of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. And then there's the Florida Civil Rights Act, which is the state counterpart to it. Mm-hmm. The EEOC is the one that the agency that actually issues all the regulations on it. And gender is very, very broad now. Gender includes pregnancy discrimination and sex discrimination and sexual harassment and sexual orientation and sexual identity. And so it's a very broad law.
Yeah.
But what the long and the short of what it says is gender is irrelevant to whether somebody has the skills to do a job.
Yeah. Well, and what a way to confine yourself from success when you really start setting up parameters in your head. The second you realize that you know nothing and you're just open to whatever comes through the door qualification wise is the second you really start making some progress.
And Amy spoke to something and she kind of took Title VII and flipped it on its head at our PWGC conference this last autumn. And, talked about a mentality of entitlement. And you ask what has gotten in the way of your growth or success before.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is I wrote down this little scrap of paper, me.
Me, yeah.
Because
I am my own worst enemy, right?
I am my own worst enemy. And one of the ways, and there are two ways that come to my mind, but one of the ways is you walk in and you embrace Title VII to a fault. You think because I'm a woman or because I'm a man, I just should have a priority on this because I have been disenfranchised one way or another. Now, you still have to earn the position. You still have to be capable of doing. And she spoke very clearly. It was actually beautiful.
Thank you.
you have to be willing to compete and be equal to and capable of putting out the work required for a job.
Sure.
And so there have been times that I have competed for a job that I was underqualified for, and I just needed to recognize that. And so walk away and say, it's all right. The better human being got it because they had the skill set, the capacity, the personality, whatever it took to actually be the better person for the job. But then the flip side of that is not, I interviewed a young man about 6-7 months ago, post-master's degree for a particular job for somebody I was consulting with. And he thought the job was below him because it wasn't in his area of specialty. And it was very, very entry grade for somebody that was coming out of a master's program. And, but everything he had applied for walking into that particular moment in his time, in his life, thought it was going to work out and it didn't work out. But in the end, so he took this job and a month later he said, I had to stop believing my own press write-ups. I wasn't all that. He thought he was further down the road than he was.
Yeah.
And so it turned into a big blessing because this entry level job turned into a fast track to middle management for him because he did have the capacity to excel. He'd proven his ability to learn, but he needed to learn to be humble and to treat his cohorts with honor, dignity, and respect. Three words that we throw around at Chick-fil-A all the time.
Yeah.
Honor, dignity, and respect. Carry yourself in a way that people want to facilitate your growth. And such. So I've gotten in my way on both sides of that before. And
sure.
I think that's true for most people out there. Don't believe your own press writings and don't believe that you're entitled. Earn that right and treat others with honor, dignity, and respect. And you're going to be given an opportunity.
Yeah. What's the Zen statement? The second you realize you know nothing is when you realize you know everything.
Yeah.
That's it. So was it you telling me about the fire the firemen and the firewomen that were competing for.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Can you absolutely share that with? Because I think that's a prime example of what we're talking about.
It is really, and I was going to mention that there's a lot of women that I've interviewed through, again, another plug, Powerful Women of the Gulf Coast, the magazine, and a lot of them that are successful. Some of them say that they're successful because they're that much better, and that gender did have a way in them being successful. You know, it was either something that held them back or something that helped promote them,
right,
because they were female. So there is still a lot, Amy mentioned it, there's still a lot of that discrimination in the workforce, and that is very challenging for young women. And the best thing you can do is help them recognize that they're going to run into that, that that's not gone away. We've made a lot of strides.
Yeah, just start being real honest with them, huh?
Absolutely. Be real honest with them that it's out there and they're going to run into that. And if they think they're not, you know, they're going to be, you know, have a rude awakening.
Yeah.
But the women that really haven't struggled with that have been the women that are in fields that are less about gender and are more about performance.
Right.
So Katie Higgins is an example of it. The firefighters are another example of it. We're interviewing a couple firefighters with the city of Pensacola in a future edition. And I didn't know it. There's 150 firefighters on the force in the city of Pensacola. Five of them are women.
Yeah.
And I thought, okay, well, you know, maybe there's a quota. Maybe they have to, you know, have a few women. Maybe they.
This is the part I love. Go ahead.
Exactly. Maybe they fill a, you know, a staff position or something that's less strenuous. And actually talking to the fire chief, he said, no, everybody is tested equally.
Yeah.
And it's all about, and they go through different tests. It's not all about physical and can you carry, you know, 150 pounds on your back. It's a lot of education tests that they have
right.
to go through.
Sure.
And they'll go through a test. They'll say, okay, today, you know, we're going through this test. Everybody has to test. Whoever's the top, I don't know how many, but the top number of people then get to move to the next level.
Right.
And then they go through a physical test and the top people have to get to move to the next level. And some of these women are not big, brawn women. These
sure.
are small women, but they've come out with a much more even amount of talent. So their education, their strategy, their, you know, creative thinking, they're also physical. But it's because it's performance-based and not necessarily, you know, there's no, well, she got to that position because she's a woman.
Right.
Or she was held back from that advance because she's a woman.
Yeah. Well, and you said it in a way that really was able for me to wrap my head around it. But for those five women, there were five men that performed less.
Exactly.
You know, and regardless of anything else, here was five people who did better than these five people.
Yep.
You know,
yep.
And that was just straight up plain and simple.
Yep.
Well, and the employer there is doing it correctly because what they're using is the term of art under Title VII is legitimate objective business standards.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're, if you're using those legitimate objective job-related business standards, then you have a valid reason for hiring one person over another person.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Is it easy to take those and apply them to every business?
We could certainly help you with that.
Sort of opened that one right up, didn't I?
We happen to be experts in that field. They're excellent collaborators over there.
Yeah.
You know, I'll share a story too. This is one that came from Quint Studer as well. When we first started talking about doing the magazine, there was one story he related to me, and I think it's absolutely evident, and I see it more and more often. The story he actually talked about was there was a woman that he's healthcare based. So somebody in healthcare that was very, very talented, and she was promoted to the interim position in a large medical facility. And she was not given the full position, the higher up position, but she was put in as interim because they wanted to wait a little while to interview and find out if there was other talent that they might be interested in. She sat in that position for more than 2 years. And he got so frustrated that he called them and asked if he could interview this woman to pull her back over to his operation.
Yeah.
The next day she was promoted to the head person.
Wow.
And you know, that story resonates so much with me because I think that's absolutely what happens to women is that this wasn't an unqualified woman. This was a very qualified woman, but for whatever reason, they were not willing to say, okay, she's the best at what she does. Maybe there's somebody out there that's a little bit better.
Right.
You know, they were willing to keep her in that interim position, hoping that they would find other talent. And reality was she was really the best and they should have moved her up more quickly.
Sure.
But it wasn't until
they got rid
of the threat of something else. Yeah.
Exactly. Of her leaving, that they decided, okay, we'll give her that full position. But sometimes I think in guiding your daughters, I think sometimes women have to have the confidence to be able to really stand side by side, you know, with other people and say, hey, I demand that I need to be.
Ask for it.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Ask for it.
Go get it. Absolutely.
Ask for it. That's the one thing that I did with my daughter. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Use your voice. And if you want something and you think you're qualified, you know you're qualified for it. Never be afraid to ask for it. I mean, the worst they're going to say is no.
And you're never going to know unless you ask.
Exactly right. It's true.
But I see that more and more often with women. I think they really struggle with that. And I don't know if that comes from their upbringing. I don't know if that comes from where. But I see women struggle with that. So that would be great advice for your daughters, is help them build that inner confidence so that when they are qualified, and I agree, Kim, you've got to be qualified for whatever you're asking for as well. But when you're at that point, to not sit back. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm reading the book Lean In right now. And that's exactly what Lean In's all about, is leaning in and sitting at the table and asking for what.
Participating.
Really, participating.
Yeah.
And right. Exactly. And not worrying that, oh, you know, maybe there's somebody better qualified or, you know, somebody that maybe it's not my time.
Yeah.
Just getting out there and
recognize
really
recognize that opportunity. Mm-hmm. She sat in an opportunity for 2 years. And, you know, you have to speak up. You have to recognize that's the position that you're in. And you have an opportunity to move up. And she had all the qualifications. Ask for it.
Sure. And go back. Because, you know, one of my first challenges this morning was to be honest and write out what your priorities are. Amy's probably had opportunity to chase a 40 or 50 hour job and knew she was very, very qualified for it. But then she would go back home and sit down and say, wait a minute, these are my priorities. And my priorities are, I want to stay at 30. So I have a family. So don't chase blindly. You know what your capacity is to perform. Know that you're an equal competitor or possibly a superior competitor. But then don't chase it in just for the purpose of chasing it.
Yeah.
Go back and look at your honesty statement, whatever you want to call it, your mission statement, and say, does this match what I want to do with my life right now? I've met many a young adult that was able to compete and then found themselves contractually bound for a period of time and couldn't make a life change because they had a career opportunity that they took, mm-hmm. and then it didn't match what they wanted. I hired somebody.
I'm smiling because it resonates so much.
You know, and I think women do have a natural born, many women, I won't say all, many women have a natural born conflict because we are also, many women are naturally enrichers, and we love nourishing and growing people. And the way that plays out in a woman's life often is with children.
Sure.
And so I hired this gal after giving her repeat and repeat and repeat guidance on, now this is what it's going to require. And she's, no problem. I can do that. I can handle the Christmas conflict with my children. I can handle. And sure enough, 3 months later, I want to have another child.
Yeah.
Well, and so that with the particular job that she wanted, it didn't play out. It didn't fit her priorities. And so we had to very kindly help her work her way into a resignation, because it wasn't about her being bad or wanting to recreate, you know, reproduce herself. It was about making a good choice.
Yeah.
And does it match your priorities right now?
But I think that's true for men and women.
It is true for me. It is. It's across the board true for men and women.
Yeah.
It's for human beings. Write a statement that tells what your priorities are. What is, somebody showed me a book yesterday, Leading with Conviction. And it talks about what are your core values. Make sure you know what your core values are and where you want to go in life. And does this line up with my next steps to get there?
Yeah. Well, and the other side of that is number one, don't always believe the employer's job description. No offense.
No, that's fair. That's fair. But, it should be a conversation.
It's an evolving document. Exactly. And it should be a conversation between not the person who's hiring you, but the employees, because sometimes you don't get a real picture.
Well, it needs to accurately reflect the job and the day-to-day tasks.
Don't tell me 40 when it's really 60.
Right. It should not be stagnant.
Yeah.
It should be an evolving document. And the way we do it is every job review, every year, we sit down and we say, here's your job description. What is the same? What has changed?
Right.
Where would you like to go? What do you need to get there?
Yeah.
Do you need additional training? Do you need, what can we do to make you successful?
Yeah.
So it should be, it should not be a stagnant.
See, and that's a whole change in mentality than it was 5-10 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. Okay, so we're getting kind of close to our time limit here, but I cannot tell you how happy I am with this conversations that we have had today. But I want to close it out by, I want to, and I'm totally stealing your question here, I want to find out what books you're reading.
Okay, so I read a little of everything. If you look at my bedside table,
yeah, it's like nine of them.
I have like 10 books on the side, and my husband is a prolific reader as well. And
you did learn that multitasking is not okay anymore, right?
No, I read one at a time. I did hear that NPR podcast on that. Right now I'm reading The Book Thief because I'm in a book club, and I'm supposed to be reading Lean In, but I have not actually gotten the dust off that cover.
Are you going tonight?
I am going tonight. Okay, good. And my husband.
That's not one you can get by osmosis either.
No.
Okay.
And then my husband gave me a book the other day that's actually more of a calendar called Top Down Goals, which is about goal setting on a daily, weekly, monthly, and yearly 5-year, 10-year basis. So we've been talking about that at home too.
Very cool.
Hey, and a tip for you, Amy, just so you know, I borrowed Lean In from somebody, and so I can't write in it or highlight like I normally would with a book. So instead, and I want to capture great information that's in that book, so I started a Word document, and I've been putting my notes in there. It's probably 20 pages by now, and I'm only about halfway through the book, but I'd be glad to share it with you so you get a little cliff note before tonight's event if you'd like.
That'd be better than reading it.
See? See how that co-creating works?
I love to hear your highlights.
Yes. Now, it's a lot. You'll see it into my personal mind, too, because a lot of the stuff that I captured is like stuff I need to work on personally. So it might not be the exact same experience you're going to get from reading it, but you'll at least pull out a lot of
That'd be great.
A lot of the information.
But that's but you make a good point of how much just resonates with you as opposed to me or the next person.
Absolutely.
So.
Yeah.
Okay.
I read and I do audiobooks because I'm on the road quite a bit.
Yeah, so. I love those too. It's so easy.
So I just finished Boundaries for Leaders by Henry Cloud, audio style, but it was so data rich. I went and bought it and I've already started marking it up. So that was fantastic. And then when I was there at the store, I saw a book Kim Blanchard had written recently. Of course, he's the champion of the 1 minute manager, the classic in business. But it's, I can't even remember the title. I just grabbed it, but it's a book on collaboration, which is key to me. So I'll be starting that one soon, but I'm currently running through, let's see here. I've got to pull this up on my phone here because I don't even remember her last name. Deanne Turner, who is the, vice president of human resources, I think, for Chick-fil-A Corporate. And she just released a book called It's My Pleasure, and it's on the impact of extraordinary talent and a compelling culture. And so I just was gifted that one. And so I cracked it open and I'm really excited to get through it. It's very well written and she's a phenomenal person. She's very key to their success because their key to success is that mission statement, their priorities and values, and then hiring the right people to accomplish that.
I think I saw a review on that and somebody said reading it was like literally sitting next to the person having a conversation.
That's yes.
Which to me is the best way to read a book.
Yep.
Because then I don't feel like I'm reading.
I have just discovered a book that I'm working through very slowly and it's called Why Do I Jump? And it's written by a 13-year-old autistic Japanese boy. I believe he's a few years older. It's just been translated into all the different languages. I got through the second chapter. This is straight from the mind of a non-conversational autistic child who understands everything going on around him, who is very, very bright, but whose words are not going to come easily to him. Second chapter, I was on Amazon, ordered a book for every one of my employees.
Cool.
It is going to be absolute paramount that we read this together and understand it during our summer training program.
Yeah, very neat.
I get goosebumps thinking about it. I'm reading it so slow, and it's a small book.
Yeah.
But you just have to
grasp. It's got that much in it, doesn't it?
It's got that much in it.
Yeah.
Wow.
Very cool.
Why do I jump?
Very cool. All right, I know you're reading Lean In, but you got one other one you're working on too, aren't you?
I know. I've been reading Lean In for a while. The other one I'm hooked on right now is called Mind Hacking, and I'm looking actually at your book called Hack the Entrepreneur.
Yeah, so I just started this today.
Did you?
Okay. Well, this morning, really, because it's a very, and I don't know if Mind Hack's this way, but it's literally like a 2 or 3 page read at a time.
Oh, nice. No, Mind Hack is not. Mind Hacking is kind of cool. It's written by a guy named Sir John Hargrave, and actually, Sir, he's not royalty. He actually legally changed his name so that Sir is
his first name, which I thought was interesting. I know. And which is,
if
really,
you don't like the way it is, change it.
And that's exactly what his philosophy is. He starts out the very first chapter, I was captivated because he talks about how he started a website where he would just hack things.
Yeah.
And he was an IT guru, but he would just make up these weird things and hack and just see if he could get away with it. And one of the ones he's most known for is that he got a credit card issued in the name of Barack Obama before Barack was nominated to run for president. Well, he didn't realize, and he put it out on his page, and you know, it went viral.
The black suits knocked on his door.
FBI showed up. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
they tried to get the card from him, and he refused to give it up to them.
Yeah.
Now at the time he was, and he talks about this in the book, he was on drugs and he was, you know, he's just a wild guy anyway.
Right.
But what he quickly realized was his life completely changed after the FBI came to see him. He quit drinking. He quit drugs. And he changed his whole entire lifestyle. And he did it all without the assistance of anything. He did it like he would do things in programming. He started to look at his brain as a computer.
Right.
And something that all you have to do is figure out what code is causing that problem and go in and change that particular code.
Huh.
So it's all about creating power with your brain.
Yeah.
And the cool thing is I'm going through the exercises now, and there's actually an app you can download. I haven't gotten that far yet, but you can download an app and you can go through these exercises every day that you play that train your brain to overcome challenges, obstacles, setbacks, things you've hung on to since you were a child, just all sorts of things. But it's all about creating everything you want in life by changing your mind.
Yeah.
And it resonates so much with me because I'm my biggest fear, or my biggest struggle is with confidence.
Yeah.
So, and I know all that lives up in my head. It doesn't live anywhere physically on the outside of me or anything in my environment. It all comes from within my head. So if I can find that code that's causing that problem and change it, then, you know, world, watch out. I mean, you think I've done some impressive things, Keith.
Yeah.
Watch out if I can fix that code.
Well, I'll tell you what I find even more amazing is that I had no idea that that is one of your fears or weaknesses that you think. Because you don't exude that at all. So stick that in your vault.
Yeah.
You know? So, okay. Well, I started Hack the Entrepreneur. And I'm like you, I read, but I don't read one at a time. I multitask on books. But this one, you'll be proud of. This one was given to me by a lady named Jenny Clark, who runs a government IT contract consulting company called Solvability. And she was in town here for the I-10 Wire Committee way back, but came back again. And when she came back, she gave this to me because she thought, oh, what a really cool thing. So it's called Hack the Entrepreneur. It's by John Nestor. And like I said, I'm probably 4 or 5 pages in, but I'm hooked already because it is literally kind of the same thing where it's like, here's a couple situations. Here's why this doesn't work anymore. And here's a different way to think about it kind of thing. So. Yeah. I'm also reading Never Fry Bacon in the Nude.
It's probably a good life lesson.
Which is written by Stone Payton, who also happens to be my business partner, but spent a lot of his time doing high velocity leadership and getting results fast and quick for companies and boutique consulting. Has some really cool tips in it, like not frying bacon in the nude, obviously, but has served on so many different platforms for me. And then the third one I'm reading is called Seth Speaks, and it's written by Jane Roberts, and it's about the eternal validity of the soul and the consciousness. And it has exactly everything to do with the absolute unprogramming of your brain for everything that society and we have programmed into it, and really opening up your consciousness to redefine every idea that you think you know into something that you either want it to be or just, you know, and it gets into all kinds of really cool 1960s kind of ESP stuff, but fantastic lessons to learn, you know? So, okay. I want to thank all of you so much. I hear that sigh. This was awesome.
This was really awesome.
Colleen gets like a huge round of applause. So I want to thank all of you for coming in and being part of Women in Leadership and of course with Pensacola Business Radio. We will have this interview back on our website and everybody can go back and listen to it, and we will share it with all of you when we're done. So
awesome. Well, thank you. A huge thank you to you too, because I think that's how we get past some of these issues that women deal with, is having men support women in leadership as well.
Yeah.
And by doing this, and this is the first edition of this series,
the inaugural episode. I really like that word lately.
Exactly. Yes. Inaugural is important.
Yeah.
But I think that's exactly how we do it. It's women hold each other back too, just as men hold each other back. But the more we can work together to help
help, as Kim mentioned, collaborate, we can change some things.
Yeah, I agree.
So thank you for being open to this,
absolutely.
This format.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, guys. Well, you can find us at Pcola Radio X on Twitter. You can find us at Pensacola.BusinessRadioX on our website. And please stay tuned for more of Women in Leadership coming up here shortly. I want to thank all of you ladies for coming in today, and I hope you all have a wonderful afternoon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Right. We enjoyed it.
It's been Pensacola Business Radio, where business is good and your work matters.